Yeah, I saw the JAC get back. They started heading to the lunch line. I figured might as well gavel in. All right, roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, January 21st. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Escobel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert. Hicks.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Excused.
Excused. Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Platern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Please stand for the prayer with Pastor Mender.
Good morning, let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, today on this hump day, we thank you for another day of life. We thank you that you are God and there is no other. We thank you that your mercy is greater than the grace of faithfulness. We thank you for these sinners, for the timorous and the wisdom. For us and all we are, for Adam and Dan Boxstead, for Malta, Leland Christensen, for Cheyenne, Stephen Hopkins, for the fire of the fire. We thank you that you give wisdom when we ask for it. We thank you that we would trust in your situation. We thank you that we would never lose it or forsake us. We thank you that there's forgiveness through your son. We thank you that nothing can separate us from your life. We thank you for our country, the greatest nation in the world. We thank you for my own.
Pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Play ball! See, the doctor today is Dr. Broomfield. I'm not sure if she's from Cheyenne, so I don't know if she's here. And then we do have a today in Wyoming history. In 1949, the legislature passed a bill prohibiting drunk flying. The thought of the day is, as a child, my family's menu consisted of two choices. Take it or leave it. Buddy Hackett.
Oh, Buddy Hackett.
Okay. We're at that order of business, reading corrections, approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 20th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
Yeah. Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Let's see. Reports from standing committees. Do you want to, we've got privilege of the floor over on Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, I'd like to have you welcome all the way from Sweetwater County. We have a couple folks from FMC Manufacturing here. We have Dave Kaplan, who's the communications manager, and Sam Bethia, who is the engineering manager here in town. And I'd like you to welcome them to the Senate.
Here.
Welcome.
Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
I have not spoken to them, but I just noticed sitting over there by Senator Driscoll, and I have no idea why, are the mayor and one of the city councilmen of Sheridan, Mayor John Heath and Councilman Jesus Rios. Welcome, please. Oh, did I? Mr. President?
You have? Senator Burns.
I think I might have stolen Senator Kinski's thunder, and I apologize to him for it as the former mayor of Sheridan.
Senator Kinski.
There's more thunder coming.
Yeah, there's more thunder. Privilege of the floor.
You may have the thunder.
Mr. President, I can't imagine a better person to steal my thunder than Senator Burns.
Other announcements? If not, we're at reports from standing committees.
January the 21st, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 85, Adult Foster Care Pilot Project, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 21st, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 64, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Extension, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 55, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 51, Water Development Amendments. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 20th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 82, Funeral Services Practitioners Act Amendment. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, Peterson, excuse, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. Are there any requests to lay any of those bills back? Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I request that we lay back for one day, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, Investment of State Funds.
Without objection, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, Investment of State Funds, is laid back for one additional day. Bills on second reading. Senate File 53, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 53, Special Elections Time Limits.
Senate File 53, there are no amendments, no discussion. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 54, second reading.
Second reading, or Senate File 54, Election Code Revisions.
Senate File 54, I see no objections. I think amendments is what I meant to say. and there be no discussion. Senate File 54, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 58, second reading.
Senate File 58, State Park Officers Benefits.
Senate File 58, there is an amendment. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I ask that second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58 be read in.
Senate File 58, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 8.
Mr. President, thank you. I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58. And members of the Senate, there's quite a bit of discussion on this bill. As you recall, this is the State Park Officials Benefits Bill. And what this amendment does, the discussion we had, if you look at page 2 of the bill, Mr. President, and you go down a little I, it talks about how the money, where the money will come from to pay for this particular piece of insurance that they will get for the peace officers. And what this amendment does, Mr. President, it inserts a language, if you look on page 2, line 8, after account from non-general fund sources. So it will read, Mr. President, the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources shall pay into the account a contribution equal to 1% of the salary paid for the office. And where it says account, you will insert for non-general fund sources, from non-general fund sources. Mr. President, that's what the bill does. That eliminates any confusion about it rolling forward and becoming a standard budget item. And by the way, members of the Senate, the amount of this is around $13,000 per year. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Discussion on the amendment.
Question.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, under the intent of the sponsor's amendment, where would those funds come from?
For your second time, let's have discussion first. Senator Ross.
Thank you. Those funds come from within the agency. We did check with retirement. One of the questions on this was, of course, actuarially soundness. They are part of the big plan, and right now it's projected that the big plan would be 100% fully funded in 22 years. The retirement system also indicated that this group is such a tiny part of that whole that it really wouldn't make any difference one way or the other to the actual soundness of the plan with what we're doing in the big plan. But the agency also has sufficient funds to do this within themselves on an annual basis hereafter. The amendment would ensure that it doesn't roll into a general fund.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes the microphone for the second time? Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, in the previous day, the question was asked if this isn't already covered by workman's comp, and I was thinking we were going to have an answer on that before we heard it again.
Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
On the workers' comp issue, I believe I was the one that asked the question, and it was answered in the debate that yes, they are. And, yeah, sponsors, if that's incorrect, I would appreciate being corrected. But that was answered, and it is covered by workers' comp.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I have some general discussions. I'll just call for the question on this amendment, and then I'll get back up on the floor.
Okay, the question on the floor is on second reading amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thanks to my tall colleague from Natrona County. That is absolutely correct. All peace officers are covered under workers' comp. So these individuals are already covered under workers' comp. And, of course, within workers' comp, and I've got all the statistics here about what they would be paid, but there are disability payments they would receive if they're injured in the active duty, and there's also settlements if there's a loss of life. And you can look under the statute 2714403 and for Section AF3, which would provide 100 months of benefit based on the salary of the worker. And so it's a pretty good program they have for that. This is in addition to that. And so I just wanted to be sure that, the Senate understood that. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Senator Driscoll.
He's sitting on the committee when this came, and this is interesting because these are additional benefits beyond the workers' comp. And the truth is, these guys don't do law enforcement duties all day long like a normal law enforcement officer. They do; they're certified peace officers, but really, what they are state parks employees that are, have a dual certification. And we talked about this in committee about the creep of this very thing happening. And really, what we've got now is a new class of law enforcement officers that qualify under a lot of different pools. And it's got some pretty good reservations as to whether it's really applicable for them, because they are not running around doing what normal law enforcement do all day long.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, on the bill generally, well, that, I think to some degree that's true, Mr. Chairman, with respect to what my good friend from Devil's Tower just said, but the other side of that coin is that there are times when they are exactly doing that very thing. On, for example, on the 4th of July, it was represented to the committee that Glendale becomes the fourth largest city in the state of Wyoming, as you have some 20 or more thousand people descend on Glendale Reservoir. And at that point in time, there are times when they do law enforcement activities, and certainly, as was indicated in a colonel type of situation not that many years ago, that there was a park ranger that was shot in the line of duty. But recognizing those differences, Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate on this thing, for a number of years, the state rangers have tried to become part of the overall law enforcement retirement plan, and that has been turned down. And so they remain a part of the big plan. In this one instance, though, and recognizing and limiting it to the line of duty, there was some discussion about how you might limit that more so they were injured in the line of duty as acting in a law enforcement capacity. But ultimately, that starts to be such a slippery slope, Mr. President, that we decided that probably is just maybe slicing it too thin. I would indicate that general law enforcement officers, under their benefit plans, their disability insurance applies both off-duty and on-duty, and the distinction for park rangers is it will apply only to disability in the line of duty.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Back when I was serving on the committee that controlled the money, I was probably one of the pivotal votes that held this back when it was first being considered, because I had the same reservations that were just voiced, that perhaps they weren't doing all that our other peace officers would do. But having an opportunity to sit back, look at their schedules, their work, and not even having a state park in the game for my area, I could see that it was probably time to bring them around and recognize them as an official peace officer. As we just heard, their responsibilities on a given summer weekend would probably rival anything out of the city. I'd ask for your support.
Further discussion on the bill? There being none, the question is... How do I lose my jacket? Oh, she's taking my jacket a little too fast for me. Thank you. The question is, shall Senate File 58, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 59, second reading.
Senate File 59, Wyoming Public Television Endowment Accounts.
Senate 59, there's no amendments. There be no discussion. The question is, shall the bill, having been read a second time, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 60, second reading.
Senate File 60, Deferred Compensation Plan Automatic Enrollment.
Senate File 60, there are no amendments. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 74, second reading.
Senate File 74, Summer School Intervention and Remediation.
There are no amendments. Senate File 74, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 12, second reading.
Senate File 12, trespassing to collect data.
There is an amendment. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move second reading amendment number two. Number two?
No, number one.
No, I'm sorry. Let me find the right one.
Go ahead and read in second reading number amendment one.
Senate File 12, second reading amendment number one, page two, line one.
Senator Perkins.
Where'd it go? Thank you. Mr. Chairman, what we've got in this memo, what we did is, when you look at the bill, what happened initially in the bill was that the First Amendment, the Standing Committee Amendment, took and removed and made the subparagraph A, which actually was a trespassing violation, and made the elements exactly the same as they were for the illegal collection of resource data, which was under subsection B. And so you ended up with what was intended to be a statute that created two violations, one trespassing to collect resource data, and made them both unlawful collection of resource data. So what this does is this puts that back to where it was prior to the Standing Committee Amendment, and so that it now is back to being that if you trespass or you enter upon this open space, this open private property with the purpose for collecting data, if you do that, then that would be this trespass to collect data. And so it restores this into, I think, the intent of the committee, and the original intent of the committee was to have these two different violations, and so it reinstates A. So A is a distinct and separate violation from that under paragraph B. So it does that, and then the other thing it did is it expanded the exceptions. We had some discussion about recreational or educational activities, and so all we did is we added one of the exceptions under the exceptions to collecting resource data without permission, was that you collect the resource data, you collect it incidental or to a recreational activity or an educational activity that you're there undertaking that activity with statutory, contractual, or other legal authorization to enter or cross that land. But it also limits that even that data that's collected incidentally can't be used for legal or regulatory proceedings. So the object is to provide for those incidental and create an opportunity to where if you're not really there and you do end up collecting some data because of a photograph, you may have picked up an Indian artifact with the permission of the landowner, or some other, do something else like that, you've collected that, and it wasn't with the purpose to collect it, but you did collect it, ultimately you don't fall within that strict liability created by this act. And so with that, I visited with the sponsor about this. I think he viewed it as a friendly amendment, and I'd ask for your support.
Senator Perkins, two things. One is that for those people that have not found the amendment, it was distributed, I think, 2 days ago, so it would be in your red folders. Right, and then so you're not able to find it. And yeah. Finally, if you'd be kind enough to move the amendment.
Oh, I moved the second reading amendment number one to Senate File 12, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Hicks.
President, we would consider this as a favorable amendment and ask for the body's due pass on this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? There being none, the question is, should we adopt second reading number amendment one, second reading number amendment number one to Senate File 12? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. The amendment's been adopted. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill.
Two more amendments.
Oh, I only get them one at a time. They spoon feed me what I need to get. We're at second reading amendment number 2, Senator Rothfuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 12 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment does two things. The first is that it adds the knowingly concept. When you look at any other trespass, you look at 63303 criminal trespass, it includes that the individual knows he is not authorized to do so. 69201 trespass in closed or unsafe areas, again.
I apologize for interrupting you, but let's have the amendment read in.
If we have to, Mr. President.
No, we haven't. Senate File 12, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 4.
If you'd be kind enough to move the amendment. I pause.
Mr. President, that's precisely the amendment I'd like to move. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 12 and hope the body doesn't hold that against me. Again, it does two things. The first is the concept of including knowingly in this legislation, and as I said, it deviates with most of the rest of the, if not all of the rest of the criminal trespass legislation or statute that's in place right now. Even computer trespass requires that there's knowing that the individual knowingly and with intent damage or cause damage to a system. So this would be the first instance for a trespass where the individual could accidentally trespass and still be criminally prosecuted. When you look at the amendment, then lines 1 through 5 basically insert in two instances that the individual knows he is not authorized to do so, as you can see on page 2, line 4. And on page 2, line 18, reading that in, you see that the individual you delete without and insert and knows he does not have. And then that includes the permission and authorization. So it would require that the individual actually know that he or she is trespassing and then acquires that data. The second component to that is the bottom portion of the amendment you can see starting on line 22 and moving to the end, all about page 5. And the concept there is even if you collect data and you don't know that you're trespassing when you collect the data, it still ensures that that data is going to be expunged, which is one of the intents of the legislation. So it helps to cover that. So if you accidentally collect data you shouldn't have, it removes it in the same manner. That's not an excuse. Well, I didn't know I was trespassing, so I get to keep my data. That wouldn't be the case. Even if you don't know you're trespassing, you still don't get to keep the data. So hopefully that covers some of the concerns of the sponsors of the legislation. And, Mr. President, the final thing that this amendment does, you can see on lines 6 through 19 of the amendment, is remove the possibility of jail time and up to a $5,000 fine for that first offense. So it adds 3 tiers instead. First offense is up to a $750 fine. Second offense is as written. Third offense, as written in the statute for the first offense, and then third and subsequent offenses would be the second offense. So it gives one penalty without possibility of jail time just to try and send less people to jail, Mr. President. Hope the body will support the the proposed amendment, and I believe it's much more consistent with other trespassing statute.
President, I'd like to divide the amendment. The first division would be lines 1 through 4. And they would also include lines 22 through 37. That would be division 1. Mr. President, division 2 would be from line 5 through line 20.
Okay, so the motion was to, just make sure everybody heard, the motion was to divide the amendment where division number one would consist of lines 1 through 4, as well as lines 22 through 37. Division number two will consist of lines 6 through 20. The chair determines that it is divisible. We're now on division number one.
Mr. President, and members of the body, division number one speaks to the issue that the good senator from the ivory tower is about the knowingly component of this provision of the statute. First, I think we need to understand the nature of why this is different than the normal criminal trespass. It's for data collection. The very nature of this activity would dictate that you're going out to a point on a piece of parcel of land to collect information. To do that, you absolutely have to know where you're at, or the data becomes absolutely meaningless. If you're going to go out and stake out a geological formation for a potential future mining claim, you can't just go out and say, I'm going to collect data in some random area. The data then becomes worthless because you can't find that spot again. There isn't a single data collection form by any agency of this state or the United States that doesn't require at least a legal description of where you're at. Because if you don't have that information, the data is moot. It means nothing. So the idea is here that if we talk about knowingly, the very nature that you're going to go out and collect information on a parcel of ground, first you have to identify what that parcel of ground is. Then you have to identify the resources on that parcel of ground. To do that, you need to know where that parcel of ground's at, Mr. President. So what effectively this amendment does is it guts the bill, and it guts the intent. What we've now done is to shift that liability for somebody that's going to go out and collect data on your private property, or any property, for that matter, and saying, look, you're going to collect data specific to a natural resource or some cultural enterprise. It's meaningless unless you identify where that data collecting is at. What we've said now in this bill is you don't need to know where you're at. We've shifted the liability from the person actually collecting the data that has had to have done some level of due diligence to say, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to go to this section of stream or I'm going to go to that plot of land and I'm going to collect information. We now live in an age where the technology is that you can get on almost any county assessor's webpage. You can find that landowner. You can buy public software right now for $100 and put in your GPS unit that almost everybody and every agency and every hunter in the United States has in their possession. And not only will show you the landownership, it'll tell you who the name of the landowner is. I really question where we're going when we try to shift the burden. And while the Constitution of the United States doesn't directly address this issue from a standpoint of property, it was never contemplated. But I think when you go to the Fourth and Fifth Amendment of the Constitution and they talk about a person being protected in their property, there's due process of law to take those properties. We've now shifted the burden away from the landowner. And I think the intent all along was to say, look, there is a certain level of sanctity of private property in this country. I think that's an intent that comes out clear through the constitutional components of both the U.S. and the Wyoming Constitution. I'm really concerned with the idea now that as a country we've moved from the point where we think the rights of somebody that has the ability readily available to go out and determine where they're going to collect this data and say that liability is not yours, it's now incumbent upon the landowner and the prosecutor to prove that you collected this data. So, members of the body, I would ask you to defeat division number one to second reading amendment to Senate file number 12.
We're on division number one discussion. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against division number one.
As the good senator just previously mentioned, this does change. This is a very specific crime. There's a reason we didn't just try to whirl this into the standard trespass statutes, which require all kinds of signage, posting so many feet apart. But one of the things about the existing trespass standard is you can actually, if it's not posted, you can go out and wander around. And in a case like we're dealing with here, with this bill, a person that was out trying to collect data could have a whole list of locations, and until they were told no, found and told no at that location, they could be out there trip-tropping around the field. This says if you're out there doing, for that purpose, collecting data, they know what they're doing. It isn't a warn them off and give them notice and post signs everywhere. I, for one, hope we don't ever get to the point where every fence line in Wyoming is placarded with no trespassing signs. But putting this kind of amendment in there does just that. I'd urge you to oppose Division 1.
Further discussion on Division Number 1. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on 4 Division Number 1, what was wrong with some of the previous discussion? I was alleged that anybody out collecting data knows precisely where they are. The data collection, which I have been personally involved in, we're trying to count all the birds. In particular, we're trying to count all the sage grouse, but all the birds, sage grouse, eagles, sparrows, whatever, in a 7.5-mile diameter circle. In our case, the circle, if I can remember the description properly, it's centered on the southeast corner of Section 1 of Township 3181. It's got a precise center, precise boundary, but I have a 7.5-mile radius diameter circle. That's, 150-plus square miles. We don't know precisely where we are a lot of the time. We're inside the circle. We don't need to know for that data collection effort. And it's very valuable data because it shows the sage grouse in that area increasing. And I submit to you there'll be times where we do not know precisely where we are when we're collecting that data. I think Division 1 of this amendment is needed.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I sort of have a question. In a previous speaker, they mentioned the fact that it's kind of inconceivable that you would go out and count something that's out of place without knowing the legal owner of the land. And I'm just having a little bit of trouble trying to figure that out. Because what I imagine kind of happens is you've got folks that are probably looking for critters and maybe plants, and they have probably a GPS unit. The GPS unit that I'm familiar with gives, it's very easy to get longitude and latitude, so you know precisely where you are to fulfill the dictates of knowing where you are with respect to a point on the planet. But mine doesn't have the capability of figuring out who the owner is, and I agree that possibly these people know what they're doing, and they should know who the owner is, and they should follow the law. But I kind of get this aspect of knowingly with the GPS unit. You could know where you are, but not know that it's private land. And it does happen all the time. And especially if you're, say, looking for critters, and you find a few here, and then you wander over the hill, and you find a few here, and then you don't find any here, but you find some over here, and lo and behold, you've crossed property lines. So I think the knowingly piece gets at the bad actors we're really looking at. I guess I wasn't sure how I felt about this amendment before, but that seems to be important, Mr. President, and I thank you for your indulgence.
Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, speaking on and against this particular amendment, and it gets back, and you've heard it before, and I'll be brief, Mr. President, about private property rights, and as I read it, and knows he does not have, and that kind of language and the type of situation that are existing out there. And just think about it, members of the Senate. If you've If you've had a ranch or a piece of ground that's yours, that may have been in your family for years and years, and quite frankly, a lot of people do not appreciate or respect private property anyway, and they have no regards for your rights to that personal property, and they're out there collecting data that they're going to turn around and use against you to try to infringe further upon your property rights, it makes no sense at all to try to put language in that says, and notes he does not have, or knowingly. And if you talk specifically what might happen, my colleague from Fremont County made a great example. You're out there looking around, and you're seeing something over here that you want to do, and there may not be a fence. A lot of that's open ground. You just wander over there. I will tell you that a lot of people don't carry a GPS. Sometimes their data is accurate. Sometimes it is not. And I think by you putting this in there, you just give a lot of wiggle room to what we're trying to accomplish with this bill, is to try to protect your private property rights. So I think this is a bad amendment. I hope you would defeat it.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I know I'm kind of, or Mr. President, I know I'm kind of invisible here. I don't oppose this amendment. This is a flashback to hunting season. We've got the exact same circle that we talked about, and it's called a hunting area. And I've got a private ranch, and, you know, we expect for hunters to know that they're either on public ground or private ground. And this is a similar type TARP argument on this. Is data collection is tied to a specific point. And the only way that data is valid is if it's tied to a point. And in this day and age, there is no reason for someone not to know where they're at. When you intentionally set out to go somewhere, be it to go to a spring for a picnic or to go where you're going, it's your duty in the state of Wyoming to know where you're at. Private property rights are pretty inviolate right as far as the Constitution goes. This one goes even further. I use the example of the sage grouse. I may not want someone to count sage grouse on my place, and that's my right. I may not want elect to be registered. Here's the interesting part. That may lead to regulation of my ranch down the road, and that's my right to do it. If they can legally collect the data some other way, that's fine. But to come onto my place and to look for something that's not some type of a violation of other law, but to come on and cause damage to me is a problem. And if you pass this amendment, I can assure you, you're going to have repeated accidents. Oh, sir, I didn't know where I was at. I've had guys on my place 7 miles from the nearest public access. I didn't understand where I was at. You'll hear a lot of that. And I really encourage you to defeat this amendment. When you're out to collect data, you're doing it for a reason. You need to know. We need to tell them clearly. If you're going to come collect data, know where you're at, collect it for a reason. You're welcome to do it, but make sure you have permission to be there.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes the second time? If not, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a good discussion. I certainly appreciate the points and the concerns. Starting with the last comments from the tall senator from the northeastern part of the state, though, with regard to the data problem, the second half of this divided amendment actually gets at that and says that if you are accidentally acquiring data in a place that you shouldn't be, that you're trespassing, you don't have a right to keep that data. And I do understand that concern, and you shouldn't get to keep that data just saying, well, I didn't know where I was, therefore I get to keep this data. I think that's a reasonable approach, and that was central to the approach of the original piece of legislation, was recognizing that you shouldn't get to keep data that you shouldn't have. I think that's perfectly reasonable, and that addresses the concept of the lex. With regard to the fact that everyone should know where they're at if they're collecting data, I understand the heart of that argument, and it's reasonable if the definition of resource data in any way applies or implies that you know where you're at. It's not in that definition. This is a very broad definition, including but not limited to data regarding agriculture, minerals, geology, history, cultural artifacts, archaeology, air, water, soil, conservation habitat, vegetation, or animal species. It doesn't say anything about, and you know where you're at, and you're doing it for an agency, and you're doing it for scientific purposes and logging where you're at. It doesn't imply any of those parameters that we heard is a good defensive position for why this is not onerous. If it had those details in it, that would be another story, but it doesn't. So the concern is this situation. Under current statute, if you find that you were lost, that's not a big deal. And you're not going to be trespassing because it's not knowingly trespassing. So you're lost. You have no idea where you're at. You find yourself on what turns out to be private property, but you don't know how you got there, and you're trying to find your way home. Everything's okay under current statute because we do have knowingly clauses in our criminal trespass statutes right now. But if you take a picture of one bunny rabbit, now, whether you know it or not, you're a criminal. You have to give up the information. You're going to be subject to potential jail time. And that's just unreasonable. I'm not saying that the proposed amendment is the only way to structure a reasonable outcome. But consistent with current statute, trespassing requires knowing that you're trespassing. It's reasonable to adhere to the same standard in this instance. And barring a requirement that you are an agency or that you have a GPS with you or you have a means of knowing exactly where you're at, I don't see how we can work around this legislation and have it be fair and equitable and reasonable. I mean, we all want to support and protect property rights. I certainly do also. But I also want to do it in a reasonable manner that allows for innocent people to accidentally get lost and take a picture of that bunny rabbit, Mr. President. So on and for the amendment, let's support this one. I certainly can't see supporting the bill without that because it would just be going far too far in statute.
Chief Clerk reminds me that is actually the first one on the First Amendment. So if there is any further discussion on the amendment number one, that can take place. Senator Hicks. All right. Senator Ross.
Mr. President, once the sponsor has taken his second time, that precludes any further debate. So we need to be cognizant of that.
I understand what I, as it turns out, that is the sponsor's first discussion on division number one.
Okay.
So the sponsor still has a second opportunity to speak on division number one. So that this is his first opportunity. So it's just having divided the amendment, he has not spoken yet on division number one. So that's the first time the sponsor spoke to it. So he'll get one more shot at it. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, members in the body, with regards to taking pictures of bunny rabbits, I believe the amendment that you just adopted addressed that concern. So, Mr. Chairman, but with that, there were some discussions about collecting animal data in a large place. And let me tell you how that actually works from an agency that does that. And it's the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. Through that process, when they collect any animal, and if they're out there, they record, it's called the Wildlife Observation Form. They record the location of that. Without that, it's meaningless. How do you know you weren't in Sweetwater County or Carbon County? You can go into their database and pull back data from 10 or 20 years ago, and it gives a location where that data was collected, because without that, it's meaningless. So when we talk about collecting data on animals, we already do it. It's the routine practice to record those locations. With regards to the GPS, log into Cabela's right now or Bass Pro or any other place you can buy for $100 a chip to slip into almost any GPS on the market today. It will show you not only the surface ownership, but in many cases, the name of the private landowner. It's readily available public software. I want to remind the body that this is information, this data, it's private information. In a lot of ways, it's no different than your Social Security number. It has some of the same ramifications if that resides in the public domain. Do you want somebody to say it's okay to knowingly get into your wallet, even though they didn't know it was against the law, to steal your Social Security number or your driver's license? That information is private information. You should be protected under the laws to protect that information. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask the body to defeat the first division of this amendment.
We're on division number one. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. The product placement, use of proper nouns, we try to not do that on the floor.
If we would recognize that courtesy. Any further discussion on division number one before the sponsor takes his last opportunity at the microphone? What's up, Doc?
Mr. President, I did give that last speech as if it was a last speech, though, so I'm a little disappointed. It's anticlimactic to come up now and try and make those points again.
That took the steam out, didn't it?
Right, exactly. Second closing. Right. Mr. President, a couple of points to address there. The first was that the previous amendment addressed this. And if you go back and read the language in the previous amendment, it certainly doesn't address this because, once again, it includes the requirement that anybody, whether it be accident or not, is going to continue to be prosecuted. There's no knowingly element to it. So that incident where you take the picture of the bunny rabbit is not going to be covered. As far as describing the location, once again, it goes back to the fact that the definition has nothing that implies the interpretation that we're reading. If it did, I would certainly be much more comfortable with it if there was some type of requirement of knowing your location or being an official agent with a company that was trying to do data collection or an agency or something else along those lines so that you have an obligation. It was not phrased that way. It's a very broad and all-encompassing definition that would allow pretty much anything, anyone, any activity to be covered by it, and that's a danger. And the final point about protecting your information, Mr. President, again, the second part of the amendment gets at that, and the statute, if passed, if this bill becomes statute, would continue to protect that and say that you're not entitled to the information, even if you were accidentally on the property. So, once again, there was no response to that particular point, but I think that's adequately covered as well. So I'd urge support for this individual amendment. Hopefully we can get this passed and make the bill reasonably consistent with statute. Thank you, Mr. President.
So that was the sponsor's second time on division number one. So the question is, division number one of second reading number two, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
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 Division number one has failed to pass the Senate.
Division?
Division being division called for. Division having been called for on for division number one, all those in favor of the amendment, please stand.
It sounded louder over here.
Seven, go ahead. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment failed. I was surprised you challenged my judgment on that one. We're now back. Did you have asked for privilege of the floor? Or we're on the... Senator Cooper.
While we have a little break, I'd just like to have a quick privilege of the floor, if I could.
I didn't hear him. I'm not hearing you.
Privilege of the floor?
You may have it.
Thank you. Mr. President and fellow senators, I'd like to introduce the mayor of Cameron, Zem Hopkins, who is here visiting with us today. But I'd also like to say he was a school teacher in the high school in Cameron and also a coach for many, many years. And my three sons caught his wrath on many occasions. He is he's a good guy.
Thank you.
We're now back on division number two. We have privilege of the floor. Senator Kinsey.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may have it.
I'd like to introduce some special guests. We have... Dayton Mayor Norm Anderson, his wife Jean, Ranchester Mayor Peter Clark, and City Councilman Craig Reichert. Please welcome them to the Wyoming Legislature.
Hear, hear.
Senator Driscoll.
From the hinterlands, Mr.
Actually,
President.
Your microphone's still on.
Privilege of the floor.
You may have it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I'd like to introduce you to the mayor of Sundance, Paul Brooks, and Kathy Lenz. I think Kathy just runs the city. Paul works for her. Great, great job and a great city. Please welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may have it.
We have an abundance of riches. We are joined here today also by City Council members Thayer Schaefer and Alex Lee. Please welcome them to the Wyoming Senate.
Here, here. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may have it.
Mr. President, in the previous debate, there was point of order about speaking on the floor, and I just wanted to refresh the Senate as to what the rules are. You can see them. It's number 8.1 on page 15 of the rules. No member shall speak more than twice on the same question on the same day without leave of the Senate. No member shall occupy the floor for more than 5 minutes each time he speaks, and then the limitation shall not apply to, and there's some exceptions there. Mr. President, it is not a rule that the sponsor of the proposition, the amendment usually is, has the privilege of always speaking last. It is the custom of the Senate, and I think a wise custom, that we try to reserve the last say to the person that sponsored the amendment. But it is not a rule, and that custom has on occasion been violated, sometimes for good cause and sometimes not. When it has been violated not for good cause, then the Senate is sometimes given the sponsor the leave to respond to any points that were raised. But the rule is you can't speak more than twice, and it doesn't speak to the order in which you may speak.
And Senator Scott, does the rule talk about refreshing the opportunity to speak twice on an amendment once it's divided?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, the rule says no member shall speak more than twice on the same question. And I think that the previous ruling in the Senate has been that when an amendment is divided, each division is a separate question.
Thank you, Senator Scott. We are now back on second reading amendment number 2, the second division being lines 6 through 20. Discussion on the amendment. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to bring this to your attention. This really comes back to what I would consider a policy issue on whether the Senate determines that this is an equal crime with just a normal trespass violation, that you inadvertently walk around hunting or taking pictures of flowers or moseying along. Does this test the bar of something different than what we currently have? Because what this effectively does is take the first violation back to what we have under our existing trespass. Members, I would contend that it does not. The nature of the activity that you're doing here isn't inadvertent, that you stepped across and were just out there because it was a nice day in Wyoming and you wanted to go to walk and you accidentally crossed some private property. This is out there for a specific purpose. That's why these specific penalties are in there. This is a much more egregious crime than that of just a normal trespass. So I would ask you for your favorable consideration to defeat this portion of the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment, Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, thank you. I rise on in opposition to division number 2 of the amendment. When you look at the language as proposed in the existing bill, imprisonment not more than 6 months, a fine of not more than $5,000 or both, this leaves it up to the judiciary to apply remedy appropriate to the reported violation. And ladies and gentlemen, I just ask us to leave that power and authority with that group. I can tell you from experience
In law enforcement of 20 years, you didn't see many people going to jail for misdemeanors, especially on their first offense. And I don't, while that is the range that could happen, if we would apply that to the neighbor's 8-year-old wandering across your yard and picking up a caterpillar, that kid's probably not going to receive much of a fine or very much jail time, or none at all. But if we have a person who is engaged in their business, of whatever group that may be, and are deliberately out there looking for information, targeting it, just to say there's a fine out there, they factor that into their cost of doing business. But if you say there's a fine and possible, a possible fine and possible jail time, that starts to impact different people in different ways. And that was a discussion of the committee, both in the interim and in our standing committee. I'd encourage you to defeat division number 2.
Senator Driscoll.
President, a little bit of echo, I think you're going to hear a lot about jail time, and you almost never see it other than the most egregious deal. If you read the papers, you've seen what some of the groups have done. And for a lot of companies, paying a fine is not a big deal. They'll pay them for an employee. But when that employee knows that in the duty of his business, he intentionally does harm, and it can cause immense economic harm to a ranch or to a landowner, that's a different situation, and I strongly encourage you to leave the jail time there so that if a judge has it. And I've watched thousands of trespass cases, not hundreds, thousands. I don't think I've ever seen a jail time with one. But the threat of it being there in egregious cases by itself is a huge deterrent, particularly to employees, not just to the guys that own the company, their employees. So I would encourage you to leave it there. I would guess it'd never get used, but it'll help make this law actually work the way it's intended. Thank you. I encourage you to defeat.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is my first time speaking on this division, although hopefully my last. We add a lot of jail time to things. We have a vast corrections budget, and I think we need to be a little bit more thoughtful about what we want to send people to jail for. At this point in time, again, you can be taking a picture of a bunny rabbit when you're lost and have the possibility of being sent to jail the first time. And I realize that we're trying to use this as a boogeyman in the background to scare people, but at the same time, it seems to me that as the legislative body of the state, we're supposed to be thoughtful about what the limits are on various punishments for crimes. And it seems to me that we keep trying to escalate that to the point where everything's a felony and everything is subject to thousands and thousands of dollars of penalties and many days in jail. The second time requires jail time, and that's a cost to the state. These are decisions that obviously are up to us, and we certainly can pass or defeat this amendment, but I would like to see us being more thoughtful about the amount of time we're willing to incarcerate somebody for on nonviolent offenses such as this. So hopefully the body will support amendment division number 2, and hopefully that'll be the end of the debate on it. Thank you, Mr. President.
No further discussion. The question hasn't been called. The question is, on division number 2 to second reading number 2 to Senate file 12, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has failed.
Sure. It sounded the same.
We're on amendment number 3. If the clerk would please read it in.
Senate file 12, second reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 10.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I would like to move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 12. Members of the body, there was quite some discussion on first reading on this, whether it should be written or verbal permission. I think in some of the deliberations in the last day or two, I think there has been some level of consensus that verbal tries to get to the point where you can have verbal permission, and that's a legal contract under the state of Wyoming. This reinstates that you can either have written or verbal permission to enter upon that land. That's all the amendment does. I'd ask for your favorable consideration, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the amendment? If not, the question is on second reading amendment number three. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's been adopted. There are no further amendments. We're now back on the bill. No further discussion. Senate File 12, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? We're having no objection. Hearing no objection is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the third reading consent list, which is follows. Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments. Senate File 25, Cease and Transfer Priority List. Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. Senate File 31, Department of Health Reports, Cleanup. Senate File 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership. Senate File 44, Large Project Funding. And Senate File 52, Elections, Vote, Centers, and Electronic Poll Books.
Hit the wrong key and I'm including my computer.
And Mr. President?
Mr. Majority Floor, just hold on a second. Trying to get my screen back here.
Yeah, there's a third reading amendment, I know.
Pardon me?
I read the one that's here. No, I'm going to take it off.
Oh, that's the one that's held on. Okay, now which one do I hit? Is it the control or the touch screen? I've got three choices.
We can do that.
We've only got one more icon.
I like it that way. I like to put them all out there, but I knew there was a third.
I think it's actually something I hit in my mind.
I didn't see it on the list.
That's the CPU. You might want to have her come just in case we don't get it. What is the CPU that is actually recycling?
Part of towns are in.
I think I'm built on it. It's actually just recycling through the CPU here. Tom, you read in one more.
There's a third reading amendment, so I mean, you do, everyone likes to do it.
Yeah.
Rather do it that way or just not have it on there.
Whatever works for you. So did you read all these? You read everything.
How are you feeling, right?
You did included. 52.
Including 52.
Every day.
Which has stressful.
So, see, but what I can do is...
He's not here, is he?
This time, let's do it this way. Then we ask it all.
He's really hacking my...
Oh, my gosh.
He's hacking.
There's a third reading amendment. I just...
You just don't read it. Yeah.
It's sticky stuff. Oh, yeah. It was the flu. I had a fever, body chills, and coughing and congestion. I'm on the mend.
This is where...
I mean, I could... yesterday, I couldn't even breathe. I mean, my oxygen was just...
Program a couple
but now...
What I don't know is whether I initiated the problem.
We'll do it your way.
Well, that's the way we've always done it.
I really hope we get through. In the house, we didn't do it that way.
The computer's dying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
We didn't have a consent list. Do you keep an eye on
him? Is it, what I wonder is if I hit my mouth, I did, or if it just got tired.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think old habits are hard to break.
What I like about it is that you showed up and it works. Isn't that?
No.
It's like when you take your car to the mechanic.
Yeah, that's right.
The good news is that Patty showed up and the commuter works again. We had a third reading amendment list. Yes. Okay. If that's a request to have it removed, it is. Oh, thank you. Senator Offus.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, there's an amendment on Senate File 52, so I'd like to have that removed from the consent list.
It will be removed. Senator Case.
President, I'd like to request the removal of Senate File 24.
Senate File 24 is removed from the consent list. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 25, cease and transfer priority list. Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. Senate File 31, Department of Health Report Cleanup. Senate File 34, Minerals Committee. Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership. Senate File 44, Large Projects Funding. The reading clerk will call the roll.
Senator, on the consent list, Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer excused, Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross, Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Fladern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas,
aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the Senate elected, pardon me. Oh, I forgot. We didn't want to give Senator Case a chance to change his vote. Let's go through the changes.
Senate File 25, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 25, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 30, are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 30. 26 aye, 3 no, 1 excused. Senate File 31. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 31, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 34, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 34, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 44, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 44, 29 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 25, 30, 31, 34, and 44 have passed the Senate. Senate File 24. Senate File 24, third reading.
Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendment, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. My thanks to the Senate for the courtesy of laying this bill back for one day. Mr. President, this bill is really not necessary. And, you know, we talk about the Constitution and Article 16, Section 6, and we talk about this issue of loaning credit and providing aid. And we say, well, this isn't that because these are revenue bonds issued by something that is separate from the state of Wyoming and has nothing to do with the taxable obligations creditworthiness of the state of Wyoming. And that is true, of course, unless the treasurer purchases the bonds. But I don't think they will, Mr. President. I think that those days are gone. But, Mr. President, it still has the appearance of lending the credit to the state of the Wyoming. It's not called Joe Blow's Infrastructure Authority. It's the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. It is staffed by folks that are employees of the state of Wyoming. So it really is a bit of muddling in the gray area, Mr. President, of Article 16, Section 6. But even that being said, the question is, what is the need for this? The idea is that the change that's now left in this bill is to allow this bonding authority to extend to projects that aren't located even partially in the state of Wyoming. Well, what kind of projects are we talking about? And what kind of financing are we talking about? We're talking about revenue bonds, Mr. President. Revenue bonds mean we're talking about financing projects that produce revenue. I submit to you that if it is a good project brought forward and backed by good companies, that they will have no difficulty raising money in the private sector, Mr. Chairman. That's exactly what private markets do. They fund projects that they can get a return on. This would be one of them. Mr. President, it goes a little bit farther. The issues involved in building a port to transport Wyoming coal overseas are very large. But financing is kind of the smallest part of that. Most of it is political, environmental, and dealing with folks that don't always think the same way that we do in Wyoming. Mr. President, I would ask us to just look at this, though, from someone else's point of view. Suppose you were the legislature of the state of Oregon or the state of Washington right now and looking at Wyoming passing this bill. And then imagine that we could turn it around, that they were debating in their chambers and they were proposing a bill to come to Wyoming to build something that we don't like. And it might violate our thinking about the environment or about our culture or about all these things. How would we feel? Why do we want to jump in this fray with both feet for something that's not needed? Because the markets will take care of it. And I think eventually we will prevail. The Interstate Commerce Clause is the most powerful thing on our side of all. But I don't think it's a good idea for the state of Wyoming to jump into this. I think we're skirting the edge of Article 16, Section 6. It's certainly not an exception provided for under Amendment 4, where it's actually a revolving loan fund established by the legislature. I can find no other exception. Mr. President, we're poking someone in the eye with a stick for something that's not needed. We don't have to provide the funding for these projects through the Infrastructure Authority. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Cooper.
If you were reading the current law, as it is stated at this current time, it says that none of these bonds, if they're to be issued, or all these bonds, I should say, if they're to be issued, say they are not backed by the state government, faith, good credit and faith of the state, I should say. And it says it right on, specifically on the bond. Matter of fact, it's in statute that says that. The Wyoming infrastructure was originally brought into place by the legislature. And it's an economic development process that we did many years ago to provide incentive to build, specifically at that time when it was originally created, to build power transmission lines to be able to deliver power out of the state of Wyoming, whether or not it was partially in the state of Wyoming or out of the state of Wyoming. Now, the issue about ports, the ports are already part of the law. It states it. In fact, we've had a bill last year that added the word ports to it. Admittedly, we don't have any ports in Wyoming. They're outside of it. But those ports, if we have any possibility to ship our coal to Asia, we're going to need those ports. And those ports are an extension of the very coal mining process that we do here in Wyoming through the connection of the rail system that we have. Now, we have countries that have told us, and this has been reported in the news, I think, several times, the fact that I believe the country of Japan would be willing to buy 160 million tons of coal from Wyoming every year if we could get those ports open and get the coal to them. And that's been reported in the papers, not just something I made up. And so that's one of the extensions for that. Yeah. Anyway, Mr. President, so there is a need to have this and this bonding capacity and also to have this Wyoming infrastructure. The legislature at the time that this infrastructure authority was created went through pains to go through. I know the Attorney General's office and also have our staff attorneys here to do research here in the legislature to make sure that we were doing it properly and constitutionally. And that's with that, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I appreciate your vote on it.
Senator Ron Flater.
The Infrastructure Authority is our lead agency in keeping us abreast of what's going on over there. We're just expanding their outlook, their look into, their research into the ports. This is something we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on trade commissions, and we emphasize the need for an outlet for the future of our coal production. This is just one way of doing it. This is one person, a couple, three people actually in the Infrastructure Authority that are keeping tabs on what's going on out there. If the states in the Northwest take this as a great insult that we are behind our own industries here and we may have differing opinions on what constitutes climate change, warming, whether man-made or not, that's our opinion. I cannot see anything that they do that they would want to do in our state that we would snub our nose at and tell them they can't do it here because that's not our beliefs. We've never run across that. I don't think that this, by just extending the infrastructure's authority to leave our states, which they were hampered before by having to have some connection in any project that originated in our state or crossed at least into our state at some point. Now we're saying, no, they can be the lead agency and keep our fingers on what's happening out there in the fight to open those ports up, and it's good for our industry and it's good for the revenue of this state.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, not to belabor, some of the issues have been brought up. Clearly, a lot of thought's been given to this member of the Senate about ensuring that that we do have a constitutional bill, and the Wyoming infrastructure is constitutional. I think that's been vetted. The only thing I would speak to a little bit about is my colleague from Fremont County talked about the image we may have at for the Oregon legislature, and I hope they would pay attention to the image we portray to them, as we don't agree with them when they violate the interstate commerce by doing things in their state that have a direct effect on us. And I can tell you, members of the Senate, if we went up to the Snake River and all of a sudden decided to take half the water from the Columbia River that was going to Oregon, they'd come right in here and be telling us the same thing we're telling to them. So I don't buy that argument at all. I think we should take a strong position. They violated the Interstate Commerce Clause. They should allow these ports to move forward in a way that's environmentally sound and those kind of things, and yet send a strong message to them that, hey, Wyoming's going to stand up for what we believe in, and what we believe in is doing what's right.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and for the bill, this bill is not just about ports. It's about this infrastructure being able to bond for anything. We're a net exporting state. We export gas, oil, and energy in the form of electrons. It would help with any of those. It is not specifically directed to ports, so it's important for the authority to be able to do that with any of our export goods.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the only point I would make at this point, you know, not, the best place in a fight is when you're heavily outnumbered is right in the middle of it. You know, that's where you feel best, Mr. President. But it's not about someone doing a little analysis. This is about, this bill as it originally came to us was a $3 billion authorization. This is to provide the funding. Now, it's probably is analysis in the front part, and that's probably all that will be done. But this actually provides the authority to issue those bonds, Mr. President. And if you look, you know, there was a resolution that the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority issued on July 22, 2005, and this was one to finance another project, and it was, of course, of direct benefit to the state of Wyoming, directly involved the state of Wyoming, and it's quite clear by the resolution that was introduced that the plan at the time was to have the Wyoming State Treasurer buy those bonds. Mr. President, that's where it really crossed the line. But even without the state of Wyoming actually holding those bonds, this is a arm of the state of Wyoming issuing revenue bonds. I can't see how Article 16, Section 6 provides for that, Mr. President, and I appreciate your time today.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 24, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter. Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer excused. Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platen.
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 26 aye, 3 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 24, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the elected Senate, Senate File 24 has passed the Senate. Senator Hicks?
Mr. President, I would like to share a little wisdom with the Senate. There was a fellow once named Mark Twain who said, if you don't read the newspapers, you're uninformed. But if you do read the newspapers, you're misinformed. So is that wisdom moving forward, Mr. Chairman? I would say that the bodies need to take that into consideration when we're quoting newspapers.
I think, Senator Doc Stater, would you like to have a rebuttal to that? Senate File 52, third reading. All right, Senator Cooper.
God, I can't not stand up to that yet. Mr. President, as many times on this floor as we've heard newspapers quoted before, so it's nothing new.
Senate File 52, Election Vote Centers and Electronic Poll Books, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to election, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. If it, clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 52, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 52 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment goes to the security concerns that I brought up under the Committee of the Whole and tries to find some way of finding middle ground to address those concerns. Mr. President, I provided some handouts to the Senate. There's three different articles here that reflect some concerns and considerations related to electronic voting. Now, this legislation does not deal directly with electronic voting as typically described in this article, because this is dealing with electronic poll books, which is obviously a smaller aspect of it than the full electronic voting. But the concepts are similar. And what it comes down to is that there are inherent security flaws and risks when you're moving to an electronic voting system, and there are certain assurances that have to be in place to even approach a secure system for voting. These are the same types of security endeavors that we would need to have in place if we wanted to go to an electronic poll book and assume that that electronic poll book was actually going to be secure. Mr. President, if we look briefly at how a poll book currently works from a security standpoint, you have two copies of that poll book at the poll. Through the day, as people pick up their ballot, entries are made in both of those poll books. And at the end of the day, it's required in statute, and we'll see where in statute, that those two books verify against each other. They come into agreement, and then one of those poll books goes back to the clerk, and the other one goes in a different direction, to the election official's house or wherever else they're willing to take it, and they're certifying that they're going to protect that poll book. The reason for that is that you have a distribution of the information such that you have a redundant copy, an agreeable copy, so that if there's a problem with the first, you have the second. And that's been the backstop of the legitimacy of our polling, our poll places, for many years. When we move to electronic poll books, there's a lot of literature and a lot of research that's been done on electronic voting, and one of the concerns is that if you only have an electronic copy, if that's all that exists is electronic data related to the polls or to the votes, there is no way to verify that that data hasn't been changed, because all you have is an electronic copy. In other words, it's terribly difficult to know whether or not you've been hacked. You can't provably tell somebody. So best practices in electronic voting include two key fundamental concepts. One is that there be access to the software and hardware behind it so that it's open source, or if it's proprietary, it's viewable by the clerks or whoever else the election official is, so that they can understand what's going on and verify that there hasn't been any compromising code put in there. Because remember, if you're using proprietary software, you're trusting that corporation with your entire election. If you're not allowed to see the software, you just have to assume they're telling you the truth. And they probably are. But they might not be. And how would you know the difference? So that's one key concept. But the second, Mr. President, is a paper trail. You always have to have independent corroboration through paper that the process can be expedited, but the paper trail has to exist as an independent means of corroborating the electronic portion of the election. So many of us right now, we fill out our ballot. It's a paper ballot. We take it to the voting booth and we hand it to the clerk. The clerk scans it. It becomes electronic, but they don't throw that paper copy of the ballot away. That's the verification of the electronic component that ensures that you have a credible election. As drafted right now, the proposed statute, the bill, does not have any such protections. It is falling well short of what is considered to be best practices, and there's no certainty that an election poll book would have any legitimacy whatsoever. There's no requirement. Now, they say that it has to be approved by the Election Commission, but one of the articles you have is how to hack for less than $20 the Diebold system that's commonly used nationwide and had been for years in under 10 minutes. Argonne National Lab demonstrated that. It's still in use in some places, but it takes about 10 minutes to hack because they don't have the proper mechanisms in place to prevent that, Mr. President. This amendment has four key points. It adds to some discussion of what an electronic poll book shall include. The first is that when source documents are created, they have to be secured and separately maintained, and that there be basically a paper record generated that verifies their registration data. So that's trying to get to the paper trail concept. The second component is surety of integrity of the system upon loss of electrical power or minor technical issues. The third aspect is that open source concept, or the ability to verify and view the information, the source code, whatever else, so that you can see that there's no problems or backdoors or anything else, any security breaches potential for that particular software. And the fourth aspect is the ability to audit the security of that software prior to using the software by elections officials in the state. Mr. President, I'd encourage the body to adopt this. It's the only way I see that we can support something that involves electronic polling, because realistically we have to ensure first and foremost the integrity of our elections. Then we can look at ease of use and low cost. But since we have no assurance of the security, it's impossible to support and go with electronic voting systems unless these simple standards are met.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to ask two questions of the amendment sponsor. First, if he has run this through the County Clerks Association, and second, he's run this through the Secretary of State Elections Office.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Mr. President, I'd like to start by looking at it this way. We're mixing up some concepts here, and I'd like to sort them out. And how I'd like to try to do this is to ask you to think of our voting process as two rooms. One on the outside you have to walk through first and complete some requirements there, and then the second one is where you actually go in and vote. Because that's actually kind of what happens. The electronic poll book is all about the first room, where you're walking up and you're saying, I'm a registered voter, I'd like to cast my ballot. And the process of checking whether indeed you are a registered voter, where you live, whether you voted somewhere else, whether you're old enough, all these things happen in the first room. That's what the issue of an electronic poll book is, Mr. President. What happens in the second room is where you actually cast your vote. This bill is not really about anything to do with the second room and the technology used and e-voting. This has nothing to do with e-voting. We are not going to allow people to get on the Internet and vote. It's the difference between the first and the second room. Now, I agree with my colleague about what happens in the second room. I like paper ballots. I think it's great. You run them through that machine. They're in a stack. If we ever have a recount, whatever, you can pull them up and look at them. But we've passed paper ballots in part of Wyoming a long time ago. And you all talk about how you use it in Laramie County. And from your testimony, it sounds like it works pretty darn good. And that is the second room. E-poll books is the first room. How you get in to vote and how that list is kept. Now, the Secretary of State's office already keeps that list electronically. There's no master paper book that I'm aware of all the voters in Wyoming. It's called the WyoReg system. It's housed with a vendor, and it's housed in a secure place, not even in Wyoming. And I understand there are different locations to provide, you know, that match that we're talking about. But that's where the master list is. That's where it all goes through. So all the voters are cleared at the Secretary of State's office right now. Right now. Has been for a long time. Now, how are we going to share that list around the state? And how are we going to make it so it can be updated from people voting and registering to vote on the day of election, which we do allow in Wyoming because of motor voter? We're all dealing with the first part of the first room. And in that first room, and the connection with the first room to the Secretary of State, and sharing that list around, yes, that's what this bill is about. That's what the poll books are. Now, I've got some specific comments from a prominent clerk about each of these amendments. The first one is that, to argue that under little I, and how am I doing on time, Mr. President? 2 minutes left. First one is that under little I, the argument is the source documents from which the poll books are created is the master list which is contained within the state voter registration system. This is unnecessary language as it already exists. In recent history, Wyoming has not required the voter to sign the poll book or any other document other than their initial voter registration form. About number two, this is not a good idea. If the source code is made available for public inspection, it gives hackers an opportunity that they would not otherwise have. Number three, if this is meant that someone from Enterprise Technology Services for the state of Wyoming would have oversight of an individual county secure connection, this would be fine, but only be applicable to those counties that would utilize vote centers, not possible to be used statewide. And then part four, the language on page six should not be reinstated. This is contemplating that there be at least one printed list available at the polling place. I reiterate, this would prohibit the use of vote centers, which is the heart of this bill and which is intended to encourage increased voter participation. Now, look, if you have problems in the first room, there are many ways to check that as you go on. You have election judges there that say, you don't belong here. You can pick up the phone calls. There's all sorts of remedies for the first room. This is about the first room. It is not at all about the second room. We're not letting people vote on the Internet. You have to get through the first room first. And what's that information? Name, address, where you live, and maybe your contact information.
Time.
Could that be hacked? Yes, it could, Mr. President, but the person is standing there, and we have proof of that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first let me make it clear that I support this amendment. It makes a good deal of sense to me to try to get some security in here. I think if you don't have this, you're really asking for trouble. I do have, though, is a question for the sponsor, and it relates to the sufficiency of this amendment. The problem that I fear most with a hacking operation is that you'll get a hack probably early on election day itself, where to make one of these vote centers work, where you have more than one in a county, and that's what they're contemplating, you have to have communication among the centers as to who's voted where. If a hacker gets in and really wants to cause mischief with the election and influence the outcome, they can't vote. They can't reach that. That's a separate system. I thought the analogy was quite apt. But what they can do is get into the communication and record that somebody has already voted when they have not. And if you want to influence an election, record that a whole bunch of people have voted. And then when the actual person shows up at the poll somewhere else, the record shows you already voted. And that would cause a world of trouble. And my question is, particularly under single eye in the amendment, if that's done and you have to physically reconstruct something, repair it, is that a very quick process so that as soon as you detect the problem, you can deal with it? Or is it a very slow process that would take some hours and a lot of people, having been turned away, would not then be able to come back and get the job done, and the outcome of the election would be compromised?
Senator von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. On that last testimony by the tall senator, I would say that an election judge could do almost about as much damage by marking all these people off that voted, and it would be about the same as somebody hacking into the system. Cybersecurity, I applaud this amendment. It has the right intention, but I also stand against it. Little double I, loss of electricity won't disrupt the election. Well, loss of electricity will disrupt an election where I go, with the polling place I go to. If the lights go out and the little electric machines that you put the ballots into all die, that election is interrupted anyway. So little I is probably not needed. It wouldn't make any sense. The thing about being corrupted and having to audit it, you're talking about every county government, every clerk would have to go through this. This is quite an expense. We don't have the money in there for that. And I can't imagine what happens if they do find corruption. What if they find it a week afterwards, if there's some software glitch in there? I don't know that there's any penalties for that, or they do it intentionally. Can't figure that out. Once again, I would reiterate the fact that the Secretary of State already has all that information electronically. So if it can be hacked, it could have been hacked, anything can be hacked. It's just fact of life, folks. And I think one of the big movie studios proved that in last month, that just about anything can be found, any kind of information, and can be put out on the Internet. And I don't know how we stop it. It's a good idea. There's not enough details in here, and it's just one of those facts of life and a chance you have to take.
Senator Anderson.
On and against the amendment, I think the intentions are good, too, and if we knew everything we need to know to do this, it would be something we ought to do. Unfortunately, this body doesn't know enough about all the details of this polling and electronic polling. We do have, however, expertise in the county clerk's office and the Secretary of State's office that will be working on that, because that's their job. And we have a lot of people that work on that in every county and in the state to take care of this. I think this gets into the minutiae too much, and we should stay out of the minutiae and let the Secretary of State and the clerks do it. So I would urge you to not support this bill. Amendment, excuse me.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the real issue, I think, here is how someone could enter the first room and be cleared through the first room when they shouldn't be there, and in a way that's widespread and allows people to cast votes when they're not entitled to. So somehow this has got to be hacked and their name gets put on the list so that they can present and vote. And then it has to be hacked again, I guess, so they can present and vote at another place. Or the people that don't even live in Wyoming or are entitled to vote in Wyoming, name can appear on the list. I suppose that's all possible, Mr. President. It's all possible. But it's a little bit of conspiracy theory to think, you know, this is not about people going in and electronically casting ballots, you guys. This is about the poll book, the name of the voter on the list. Well, it'd have to be pretty amazing for someone to come in and do this and not raise red flags. Perhaps not right there, and perhaps in a very close election. I suppose it's conceivable. But it would be illegal, Mr. President, and it seems to me that if you had a busload of people show up and they walk in and their names are suddenly on the list, which I find inconceivable. Let me just say I find that inconceivable, but that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a system where people enter the second room and votes are cast not from the Internet. Okay, understand that. Now, look, I agree with the comment about this is too much minutiae telling people what to do. These clerks work all year on elections. The Secretary of State's office is amazing about their conduct of elections. They're elected to do exactly that. And they are recommending to the legislature that we go to this system. And it is a trial system, Mr. President, not going to be used by all counties. And we'll see how it goes. And sometimes you have to trust elected officials, Mr. President. I certainly do, and I ask that you do as well.
Sponsor for a second time, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I had not intended to speak a second time on this issue, but several things have been said that I think need to be responded to. I don't think the risk here is that we will make it able for people who are not properly proper registered voters, not residents, not entitled. Well, I don't think we'll make it able for them to vote. We've got same-day registration to vote. You've got to show up in person. We can deal with the risks there and keep those under control. Mr. President, the fear I have from a hack on this is that people who are entitled to vote will be shown electronically as having voted when they have not. And that's the risk you've got to deal with a hack. And I renew my question whether I think this amendment's a good idea. I think it's essential if we're going to do anything with this bill. But I wonder, is it sufficient to prevent that evil, which I think is the real risk?
Sponsor for a second time, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. To answer that last question first, no, I don't think it is sufficient. I tried to amend it in a way that I thought would provide some flexibility and provide sufficient direction to get it going in a way that would be secure. But I'm not fully confident that it gets us all the way there, but there's a lot of valuable aspects to this legislation, and I was hoping to be able to support it in the end. There's a few points I do want to address. Did the County Clerks Association and the Secretary of State's office look at this amendment? A few of them have looked at it, provided some feedback. We heard some of that from the good senator from Lander. But no, writ large, they haven't. I know that some have, and I've communicated with some as well about it, but not a broad response to the good senator's question. Regarding my colleague's discussion about two rooms and the delineation between the poll book and the electronic voting aspect of it, I think it's a good analogy, and he's right about the fact that these are two separate concepts. You have the poll book and you have the voting. And obviously the voting security is a big concern, and there's a lot of literature about that. But we have a lot in statute already about the sanctity of those poll books because they are actually also important. If you're questioning the results of the poll book after the election, then you have an election that is in question. It goes to the good senator from Natrona County's discussion about, did this person vote? Yes or no? That really is an important question. An important part of an election is whether or not you can vote early and vote often. And if you don't know who has voted, then yeah, you can vote early and vote often at that point. So there's two concepts to the integrity. We have to know the ballots are legitimate, and we have to know the poll book is legitimate, which is why this redundancy is in place in current statute and is required that you have the verifiable duplicate poll books. And it's true that the poll worker could mess with those, but when you mess with those, it's verifiable and you have multiple humans there. You know which the likely candidates are, and they can only do damage in the small sandbox that they're working in. If you gave an anonymous individual halfway across the planet the same authority to mess with it, and not just one poll book, but the entire election, you've got a different story there. And you've got much more possibility for bad outcomes. Now, with regard to the concept of the fact that this is already electronic, we already have the WyoReg system. The WyoReg system can be duplicated, it can be independently secured, and it is the registration system. But it's that moment at the poll booth where you have to have a duplicated independent confirmation of the receipt of that ballot that is different from the WyoReg system. So the WyoReg system, there are methods in place. You have duplicate copies in multiple locations. You do things called hashing algorithms. There are digital timestamps that allow you to validate that. There are great algorithms in place. Regrettably, there are no great algorithms where the experts, and I mean the folks who do this research 24/7, that's what they do for a living, none of them are confident that we have a solution yet that is fully that they can be fully confident in. But they know that two key components are the transparency aspect and the paper copy, the paper trail that allows you to put back together the election after the fact. Whether or not it's quick was another question. The answer is no. If you have paper that you have to go back to, it's going to be slow. But that's the same as the system we have now with paper ballots. If you question the integrity of the election, you have to do a paper count. So there are alternative avenues available, but they're not fast avenues. To the good senator from Campbell County's questions with regard to the election judges and invalidating the results, if the power goes out, just to that quick point, it's not whether or not it shuts down the election, it's whether it invalidates the results. In other words, can you still believe the results of the election if there's a glitch? You have to be able to. So that's very different. If the power goes out at the poll booth, you still believe the outcome of the election. So it's a different consideration. And with regard to the expertise and the clerks, I'd go back to this little discussion. On November 6th, this is the last election, millions of voters, including many in hotly contested swing states, will cast ballots on e-voting machines that researchers have found are vulnerable to hackers. What is more troubling, say more critics, some critics, is that election officials have no way to verify that the votes are counted accurately. In that instance, the problem you have is that the election officials are not computer experts, and when you ask computer experts, they are fully confident that we cannot have the integrity of this system when it's electronic alone. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. The ayes and nays being called for. Roll call on the amendment. The question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 be adopted to Senate File 52?
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Escobel? Geis,
no.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Kinski,
no.
Landon,
no.
Meyer excused. Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson? Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platen?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 6 aye, 23 no, 1 excused.
Third reading amendment number 1 has failed the Senate. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? Senate file 52. Having been read a third time, the question is, shall be adopted by the Senate. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer excused. Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
No.
Scott.
No.
Von Platen. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Von Flader, no to aye.
Hicks, no to aye.
Hicks, no to aye. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 25 aye, 4 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 52, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 52 has passed the Senate. Are there any additional messages you want to... We ready to go to General File? We're done, or do you want to have any messages? Yeah, do you have any messages you want to read? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business of general file, unless you want to go to lunch.
Mr. President, I learned a long time ago not stand in front of this body when we're going to lunch. Therefore, Mr. President, I move that we stand recessed until 2 p.m.
Announcements. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Senate Appropriations Committee will meet immediately in S-11 to... consider Senate File 27, which is the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway. We'll take that up right away, and then you'll have an opportunity for lunch. And then, of course, JAC will continue to meet upon adjournment to continue our work on markup.
Senator Platen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet in about 20 minutes in S-18 to consider Senate File 65, Savings and Loan Associations, Senate File 68, Property Rights Ombudsman, Senate File 70, Cooperative Electric Utility Rate Adjustment Notice.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment in room S-14, where we will consider Senate File 81, Lifesaver Program 2, and Senate File 19, VIN Inspections.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., January 22nd, in room S-14 to consider Senate File 63, Predator Ownership.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Note the time, everyone, 7 a.m. in room S-19. We're going to start through a list of bills. Senate File 37, State Protection of Data Privacy. Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force, Reappropriation. Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy Constitutional Amendment. Senate File 36, Personal Identification Information, Definitions. Senate File 35, Security Breach Notification. Senate File 41, Employee Online Privacy. And we all inherited these bills from your Privacy Task Force, Mr. President, so that's why we ended up. We're going to try to do them tomorrow.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a brief announcement about an event tomorrow. Governor John Kasich will be here, who's Republican governor from Ohio, will be here Thursday, January the 22nd, to discuss House Joint Resolution 4, which is proposed by various members of several from this body. There will be a meeting from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. in B-63 with Governor Kasich. There'll be another event after that, a press event, if anyone's interested, in room 302. Governor Kasich is also bringing other individuals who profess to have some expertise concerning concerns about rogue constitutional convention and other issues surrounding the HJ-4, which is a call for the convention. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President.
Any further announcements? There being none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stay in recess until 2 p.m.